Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
If you've been paying attention to the news headlines of late, you'd be well aware that we've seen an increase in the spate of kidnappings making waves in South Africa, where criminals essentially target anyone and move around with them for ransom, or force them to actually withdraw funds from their bank accounts, leaving them with nothing left to account for. We thought we'd follow up on this story just to essentially understand what is driving this particular theme with a forensic investigator, but more so also understanding the financial impacts if this does happen to you and how banks and financial services organizations are helping us to apprehend some of these concerns. Chad Thomas is an IRS forensic investigator, and Niroshi Masiti, lead ombudsman at the banking division for the National Financial Ombudsman Scheme, join us now for this conversation. Good conversation with you both. And I guess, Chad, let's start with you to make sure that we can get some perspective on this angle and dynamic. But as we understand, conversations within your industry, especially the financial and banking industry, have been taking place around the spate of kidnappings. Help us contextualize just how common an occurrence that this has been in South Africa, and what's essentially driving this increase.
Good evening to you and the listeners. Guguletje, in your intro, you made a very valid point. You said that kidnap for ransom is impacting everybody. A lot of people are under the misconception that it only targets rich people, people who are moneyed, people can afford huge ransom. That's not the case. We see it across society at the moment, where you have people being kidnapped for a few thousand rand, all the way up to, of course, the million rand kidnappings that we hear about. It's impacting people in informal settlements, middle class suburbia, and of course the very wealthy of society. And the dialogue has been going on for a number of years about what to do about this. We've grown from the seventh worst country in the world to now the sixth worst country in the world when it comes to kidnap for ransom, and we're number one on the African continent. It's very important to understand that this is a problem that needs to be addressed from a multitude of players. At the moment, Crime Intelligence has taken the lead by creating an anti-kidnapping task team. And although they're making inroads, we heard with horror this week how four members of Crime Intelligence were actually kidnapped, and were actually arrested, rather, for being allegedly part of an express kidnapping syndicate. So we are very concerned, and it's very important that this dialogue does continue.
Chad, to stay with you, as you say, this is far and wide, impacting consumers with as little as 400 rand to 400 million rand, perhaps. Help us contextualize, is this a syndicate or just also a group of chancers taking their luck?
So it started off primarily with a syndicate. It was a cross-border syndicate that had manifested itself in Mozambique, operated with great success in Maputo, and decided to export this crime into South Africa, targeted a specific community of businessmen, primarily the Muslim community, who are known to have cash-type businesses, specifically in the wholesale and distribution. It then spread into other communities. We've seen Portuguese businessmen targeted. We've seen other people from other race groups and demographics targeted. But I think what's come out of this is when you hear about the significant amounts of money that have been paid, this has created an opportunity for opportunistic criminals to now become copycats. And this is the problem we're seeing in South Africa. We can't now lay the blame at the feet of one syndicate, because as quickly as one syndicate is closed down, 10 new syndicates rise up to take their place.
This is quite concerning, Chad, and I can imagine in terms of what you are finding in conducting your forensic investigations, there's a plethora of aspects we need to be mindful of. And as you've mentioned, there is an anti-kidnapping task force that's been put in place. But what other measures are we seeing in terms of security or heightened vigilant support that's being provided to prevent these kidnappings from taking place?
So what you are doing right now is one of the most critical things. You are bringing it to the attention of the public at large, and we're able to communicate to the public that whether you're a parent in an informal settlement or you the owner of a multinational company, you are equally at risk of having somebody in your family kidnapped, and you have to be aware of that. The anti-kidnapping task team was established out of the National Office of Crime Intelligence by Major General Feroz Khan, and they have embraced the partnerships with the private sector. And this kidnapping task team is therefore made up of a multidisciplinary interagency task team that embraces the need for collaborative effort. So you see security companies and private investigation firms together with the banks working with crime intelligence, working with the South African police services, who in turn bring on board the SWAT, the task teams and the national intervention units to assist in the disruption and dismantling of these type of units. We have to continue the conversation and we have to make the public aware of this, because it's not going away anytime soon, especially when people see the value that's attached to kidnappings.
Mm, very true. Narosha, let's come to you here to understand the financial aspect. As Chad has elaborated, we understand that it's as big as syndicates that are serious and have been thriving for a while, to opportunistic thieves taking their chances on individuals that they believe might have flush cash flow in their bank accounts. I'm hoping, Narosha, from a banking point of view, representing the NFO, that you can help us contextualize how these transactions typically take place. And I'm assuming it's a plethora of methods, from the kidnappings to, having you actually transact and withdraw money from your account into that of the criminals.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Gugu and Chad, and good afternoon, good evening, actually, to your listeners. Yes, I found Chad's introduction there very interesting. On our side, what we're seeing is that it's starting off with express kidnappings, which primarily target bank clients. I think the reason we're seeing the shift to this kind of crime at the moment is contactless payments and anti-fraud measures that have been implemented by banks by requesting biometric verification, for instance, has somehow made it very difficult for criminals to transact on victims' bank accounts without the victims being present. So as a result, there's been a surge in cases where bank customers are kidnapped and forced, often under gunpoint, to disclose their confidential banking information. So what starts off as express kidnapping, because they take them and then they force them at gunpoint to open their banking app and try and get all the money out of that platform. After that avenue is exhausted, we find that they then move on to ransom kidnapping, in that they contact the family members and say, listen, we've got the person. If you don't pay up, we're going to do this and that and try and get more funds out of the customer. On our side, as much as we sympathize with the customers and what is happening now, from a legal perspective, the bank only becomes liable at the point when the crime is reported to them and they have a duty to stop that account and stop further transactions. So, Google, yes, we have seen a few complaints. They're definitely increasing in our offices. And exactly like Chad said, we actually issued a press release today around the issue, because consumer education around this subject is extremely important in order to rethink customer or consumer behavior in terms of their banking, and also in terms of making contact with your bank to put in measures in to try and mitigate the losses being suffered in that space. It does become very tricky, because whilst the banks may inform the customer as to the measures they're putting in place in terms of protecting them for this specific trend, we must also bear in mind that the criminals themselves are also customers of this bank. So they also will become alerted to this extra layers of security and will be able then to ask the customer, I know that the bank is doing the following. I know you're trying to hide your app or limit your funds. I want you to access that fund. So it's not an uncomplicated conversation.
Hmm. And this is so important, right? Because once you are in that circumstance and under duress, quite literally at gunpoint, it can be difficult for consumers to do. And I'm assuming you've seen many complaints where banking customers actually then transfer this money into this particular account of the criminal, and then follow through with a complaint to the bank and potentially to the ombudsman. What are we seeing there in terms of recourse? Does the bank have to assist you? And what proof do we need to supply to make sure that we get the money back?
Okay, so firstly, we definitely welcome these complaints to the banking division of the NFO. It's something we can look at and investigate. In terms of how the bank, in terms of the liability of the bank, as I alluded to earlier, there's no liability on the side of the bank in instances where information is given voluntarily. Mm. I understand that in this instance was under duress, but whilst we can sympathize with the banking customer, we need to understand that the bank on their side cannot be held liable for these losses as a result of the crime. Mm. But what we are seeing on our side is that depending, but remember each case is assessed under the specific set of facts and what happened there. We are seeing that in terms of certain instances when vulnerabilities at play, the banks have been refunding a portion of the losses purely on the basis of goodwill, not in terms of any merits in terms of liability.
Sure. This will sit very uncomfortably with many South Africans, Naroshi, and I understand it's because the experience is stressful, the exchange in that moment, and as you say, if the information or the money is actually shared voluntarily, then the bank actually can't be held responsible for paying you back. There is no recourse. Are there other circumstances, though, where as the finance office of the NFO, the bank office, I beg your pardon, you've had an opportunity where banks go beyond just goodwill and actually replace the funds that have been lost by those persons or people who've been impacted by kidnapping?
So with those instances, which it will be in terms of mitigation, if we find that after reporting, because remember the customer can only report this loss after they've been freed from being held hostage. So once they report the loss, we look at whether the bank timelessly stopped that account, or if they didn't stop the account, were there further transactions that happened as a result of them not stopping the account? And in that instances, we will recommend that the bank refund. Because remember, the liability passes to the bank once the fraud is reported, irrespective of the fact that the information has been divulged with the consent of the customer. So, it's as I said, it's just not an uncomplicated discussion. We've had a legal workshop as an office recently, and we unpacked the issues with the various representatives of the respective banks. And various measures are being put in place. There's a larger conversation, like Chad indicated, with SABRIC and law enforcement. We cannot lose sight of the fact that ultimately this is a policing issue. Mm. It's a crime issue. So I think there is a collaborative effort happening between the respective bodies to try and tackle this type of crime. The banks have also indicated that they also find difficulty in trying to ascertain the validity of the complaints they're getting. Mm. They said there is a certain noticeable portion of the complaints they're getting where the kidnapping was not actually real. The information was not actually provided under duress. So there's that challenge, you know, like, was it really a kidnapping where information was processed under duress and the customer suffered a loss, or was it a stage incident? So those are the things, or the real issues that are in our space.
Sure. We had a question as well from one of our callers who left a message, Naroshi, and this one is directed to you, if we can extend the conversation slightly. Just in terms of understanding if the banks have any authority in reviewing, investigating the bank accounts, essentially where the deposits would be made into, because I'm assuming by that they'd be able to identify who the account holder is and who the kidnapper or person who's part of the syndicate would be.
Yes, 100%. I think the banks at that point work with the internal departments that handle these type of crimes. From my understanding with them, they've actually set up specific divisions to deal with this type of crime in terms of kidnapping, and they do work with law enforcement to try and follow the money and follow the person holding the account.
Definitely. Before we wrap up with you, Naroshi, Chad, I just want to come back to you because it sounds like we've got a very serious problem here on our hands. And as Naroshi has mentioned, this is actually a crime. It's criminal activity and does need solutions to be brought about in terms of multiple solutions. But for someone who's an entrepreneur or someone who just has a lot of cash in their bank account because they're good at saving, what do we and can we do, not only in that circumstance and environment, but I guess to mitigate some of the challenges of kidnapping?
Look, it's a very serious crime, and it is an increase. The fact that we're number one in Africa, number six in the world, is a fair indication that this has become a massive problem in South Africa. The fact that people are at risk of kidnapping, they should be making, certain decisions regarding how to manage their banking app on your phone. It shouldn't necessarily have access to your savings. Your savings should be kept somewhere completely different, and you shouldn't actually have it as part of the app on your phone. And I know that we live in this ultra-convenient world where we want everything at our fingertips, but we have to be risk-averse. So if we do have money that we have been saving, perhaps we need to be cognizant of the fact that anything can happen. So we should perhaps have that extra layer of security, because it doesn't help having multi-factor authentication on your banking app on your phone if somebody's going to hold you literally to ransom and assault you and hurt you, because you will give up your PIN and you will be able to use your biometric login particulars. So I think we just have to be cognizant of the fact that anybody is at risk, and we should be safeguarding our assets no matter what they are, and making the target as hard as possible. Otherwise, the criminals are just going to get worse and worse and worse the easier we make it for them.
Nirosha, your closing comments?
Absolutely in agreement. As consumers, we also have to become vigilant in terms of what we're posting on social media platforms. We don't post sensitive financial information. We don't put our expensive cars and our expensive branded clothing and our jewelry, because that actually attracts attention to ourselves and you become a target. I think other things like geolocation, sharing that with your loved ones so they'd be able to track where you are. In terms of varying your daily route to work or wherever you're going, so that you can't really a criminal can't predict your routines in order to track you down. So a lot of things I think we can do, and also engage your bank. Like I said, the banks are fully aware of the latest MO, and they are internally trying to put in measures to assist these consumers who are undergoing these traumatic events. So reach out to your bank and maybe try and tailor make your accounts where you're able to make proper investments with notice periods that direct immediate access to those funds can't be gained. So it's things like that will definitely help to limit losses that are being experienced in that space.
Sure. Thank you so much to the both of you. A reality check for all of us as South Africans, regardless of the amount of money that we have in our bank accounts, just to trade with caution. And of course, continue to support the efforts of investigators and authorities who are doing their best as well to make sure that these kind of syndicates are brought to book. Such a pleasure having you both, and thank you for your time this evening.
Thank you very much,
Google. Thank you. That was Chad Thomas, IRS Forensic Investigator, and Nirosha Masetti, Lead Ombudsman in the Banking Division of the National Financial Ombuds Scheme. Three lessons to learn here. Regardless of the amount of money you have in your bank account, tread with caution. South Africa is the number one kidnapping destination on the African continent. And globally, as Chad mentioned, we are listed at number 6 in the world. As Nirosha mentioned, unfortunately, if the money is voluntarily paid to the kidnapper, the bank has very little recourse that you can actually claim from them. Fundamentally, that money would have been transferred voluntarily, and at times they might pay you back, but out of goodwill. Another theme that the banks are also quite cautious about is fully investigating the matter to make sure that there aren't any false claims, as this appears to have come to the fore.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.